And it's gone.
Okay. How appropriate.
For it to start with your laughter.
That's true.
Everybody knows now that they're at Discovery.
I just did Corey's podcast, and I listened to it, and there's a lot of laughing. Yeah. And I'm like, oh gosh, I laugh a lot.
Yeah.
I got a little insecure about it. Okay. You guys ready?
Sure.
Cool. Thanks for doing this, you guys. I am so grateful that the three of you are going to serve our church, serve Discovery in this way. The work that you've put into your individual messages is really meaningful. Not just for me as your friend and pastor, but for our church, as you have listened to the Holy Spirit, listened to the text, and thought about this community of people and what God might want us to hear. And so it's a gift, and so thank you. This is different. This is the three of you, our resident experts on 1 Thessalonians. just talking a bit more free form about 1 Thessalonians. What are the things that beyond your specific passage you have connected with and been learning? How are we approaching this book? What are some ways that we can help our people be thinking about the process of coming to the text? I mean, these are some of the things I want us to talk about. And how are you practicing faithfulness to Jesus in response to this text, and where have you seen others living that out? So no pressure.
Yeah.
Cool. We're just going to talk. So you guys know we've been in Paul's letters all year, and we're getting close to the end of the year, and we are in 1 Thessalonians, which is kind of weird that we saved it for one of the last, because it's often assumed to be one of the very first letters. Talk about some of the context of this letter. So, you know, as you jumped into it, like, what do you know about its connection to the story of Acts? What do you know about Paul and his relationship with this church? Like, what are some of the things that are stirring around in you as you're listening to this letter?
So yeah, out of Acts 17, Paul comes to
Thessalonica. I think that's how they say it.
I grew up calling it Thessalonia, which doesn't.
It's either Thessalonica or Thessalonica. So
okay,
either way.
Okay, Icarica, okay. You name it. So that in Acts 17, Paul comes and shares the gospel, and Jews and Gentiles both turn and start to follow him in the midst of lots of persecution, and so much persecution that he has to run. He bails really quick.
Yeah. And what else do you guys know? How long is he there? What, you know, how does he maintain a relationship with them?
It sounded like he wanted to stay. They were forced out, him and Silas and all these people, and I don't know, was it like 3 years or something like that? I don't know. He usually spent a bit of time with people when he was there. But in the way of communicating, we get letters. Like, we get, and something that I was talking to Manny and Jen about is like something I read in one of the commentaries, and it was really cool, is that like thinking about letters and how we receive them today is more like text messages now. but then letters would take a long time. You think about how long it would take even in like the 50s, you know, to receive a letter. That back then, how long would it take to receive a letter and people be waiting for it and then receive it? It would be received as more of like a message, not necessarily like a letter. Oh, it's like a sermon, like, but to encourage them. And so this is the way like they maintained that relationship, but they also waited very like faithfully, and were expecting. They were waiting and expecting to hear from Paul, and I think that's really neat. in a time where it took a really long time to hear back.
Yeah. I'm mostly just curious, like, what's your sense of their relationship with this guy? You know, what, and some Paul's assistants, right? Like, how would you describe just the relationship that they share with each other?
It was when I look at it, when I read it, it's like a family relationship. A lot of the language that's used is brother and sister and mother and father. So, yeah, so that and a relationship that was deeply loving. So they had such a strong relationship that when Paul wasn't there, he wrote about how much he like longed to be there with him, and even sent Timothy, I believe, to go and check in on him, and getting reports back that they were doing well and still living it and going strong and going hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, his attention to them when he was there, it seems like from 1 Thessalonians, that they were very intentional to not be a burden. They were very intentional to not try and use flattery or convincing language or try and trick anybody. But in the midst of that, we were gentle among you like a mother caring for her little children. And then you treated us back in a similar way, right? So there's a desire for there to be very clear a record of the ways that they loved each other well, like a good reminder of like, do you remember when we hung out and it was like, we were laughing and we were having a good time and we ate together and I cared for you when you were sick and you cared for me. Like, it just feels very familial and tender. Mm. He uses a lot of tenderness language with them.
Yeah. You know, I get the impression that he wasn't there very long, that he wasn't there as long as he was at some of his other churches. And if say he were only there for a few weeks before, I think, you know, Acts 17 talks about the Jewish people in the community really getting angry about his message and what's happening and pushing him out. How would that shape some of the like language of 1 Thessalonians in terms of like urgency and some of this other stuff, just the short period of time that he was there?
Yeah. Can you say that question again?
Yeah. So if Paul was only there for, let's give him a month max, how does that shape your hearing of some of his like urgent language to like return to them and to get word to them and some of his sort of like need to see them again?
So I have a similar experience, I suppose. Not like Paul, I'm not a Paul by no stretch, but like I went on a mission trip and like just thinking about like the language of it. I'm not much of a crier at all, but I was there for 2 weeks. No, a week. I was there for a week and built such a strong relationship with people I couldn't even speak to without a translator that like the last day there, I like bawled my eyes out. And it was like an authentic, like loving, like relationship that we developed over the course of that week, just like spending so much time together. So I think like, even if he was there just for a short amount of time, the amount of time they spent together, they got to like know each other and like love each other genuinely. So that also like leads to the urgency. So I think since that Mexico trip, I haven't been for a few years, but I had went consistently and looked forward to it and like longed for it. Mm. In a sense, like I feel like I see that same type of like, man, I can't wait to go back and be with these people who I developed these like deep, deep relationships with. So so I feel like, to me, we got to see a picture of it. Cause I always think we feel like you have to be somewhere a long time to develop deep relationships. But I think if you're intentional and you do spend time together, like the church can look really different. Yeah. When we're local, if we spend time together like that.
Yeah. It reminds me of one of the things you said as we were studying about the ways that, as we were reading, Manny was commenting on how faith calls to faith, calls to faith, like this cyclical relationship. And I think part of what you're saying is not only did Paul impact Thessalonica,
Sure. No, that's great.
Just say the first Ica. Little
There's something I think that impacted him in such a way. So, and not just as like, oh, pastor wants to make sure that we're like not losing our faith because there's like difficult times and like he got drove out and there's lots of opposition and suffering and persecution, but like a sense of there's something about the experience that he had with them. He references, it didn't just happen in words, but with power. And there's something that it connected with him that makes him long to be with them as well. That the way in which they came to faith and his faith grew were intertwined.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is like, I think even in that urgency in him leaving, he notices that like, he hears the news that they're doing, I don't wanna say great, but they're doing great, you know,
yeah.
And how, I don't know how, what went through his mind in thinking about that, but just knowing like, oh, I read something and it said God sustained it, rather than Paul thinking he, like, because he's human, wanting to be able to make sure that they're okay, make sure that they have, that they're staying on track and not just to be perfect, but to be, in what they were able to do there for the whatever time, short or a little bit longer, that like it their testimony, their transformation as a whole, as a people, is being sustained by God. Mm-hmm. And it's by them saying, yes, I will follow God, and that Paul did his work. Like, and they were continuing to do the work. Like, they weren't just saying, oh, I'm just gonna wait for Paul and get it back. So they just continued. And so I think that's a really cool testimony as a people. Like, not even just as one individual person, but when we talk about the body of Christ, like, that they really represented how a body of people respond. Mm.
That's good.
Well, and there's this, like, beautiful mutuality that I hear, that Paul sees God as the one who brings the growth, right? It's God is the giver of life. And yet Paul sees himself and his team as integral in God's work to start this thing, to plant the seeds. But then he also sees that he still has a role to play in helping to nurture whatever life is there. And so, like, part of the question becomes, you know, when Paul looks at this community, I mean, we think about the church, we think about our work in the church, and I think all four of us have been involved in evangelistic ministry at various points. I know that I've been part of ministries that have celebrated that initial, like, shoot. There's life there and something is happening. But Jen, you pointed out that Paul's very aware that the same persecution that kicked him out is still present. Mm-hmm. And they're still enduring and still have to figure this faith thing out in the midst of, like, trials, difficulty. And this reminds me of, so one of the questions that we have in all of our small group studies is what passages from the First Testament might speak to or shape our understanding of these texts, but then also what New Testament images or passages might help us understand what's happening here. And at least one passage that jumps out as I think about the context is Jesus telling the parable of the different soils. And you think about some seeds don't bear or don't grow at all, and others begin to grow but wither, and others are choked out, and just that there is this, like, interesting mutual partnership with God, that God invites us somehow, seems to be inviting Paul to stay faithful, stay connected to these people.
See, but I think Paul even has the next level understanding of that, right?
Yeah.
All right, so not to say that your level is any,
yeah, what's the next level?
Paul sees his faith as integrally connected to them. Like he needs them for the body as much as he knows that they need him and his experience of faith, right? So he can't imagine a world in which the body is split into these different divisions, or he doesn't want, he knows that the kingdom of God looks like this connectedness and how they are doing in their faith and how he is doing in his faith are actually
intertwined.
Yeah. And like, so he needs them. Yeah.
Like there's like,
go ahead. No, do it.
Now there's like an awareness though, just of our of his need for them and their need for him. Like we need each other.
Yeah.
Like we're not meant to do this on an island alone. Like, yeah, we absolutely need each other. The Christian faith is not meant to be lived in isolation. And like we said earlier in our conversation from a different time, our faiths like touch each other and it's like cyclical. Like I'm encouraged by your faith. Like there's moments in my life when I'm struggling and I have brothers who are not in the same place as me, and they have their own struggles of course, but like they're not in the same place as me, but just seeing them going hard after the Lord like encourages me. And I know it's vice versa, you know what I mean? Like, and we need each other. So I can't imagine what it looks like to be a believer without true community, like without true people to be around and see them going after Jesus and being encouraged by that. Like, I would even argue that it's impossible to like live your life as a believer and have any kind of like real strong solid faith without others.
So what is it about the Thessalonians faith, their pursuit of Jesus, that is this encouragement to Paul? Like what is it in them that he is being energized by and that is sustaining him? That's a gift to him.
I would say just their love. I think he says like verbatim, I think somewhere like, you guys are loving in the way that you're supposed to. So I think that is, yeah. I could look for it real quick. I don't know if that's awkward on cam, but I think he says that like, yo, you guys are doing a great job of living out the love that God calls you to. Well, and that's an encouragement.
Yeah, I mean, he says that they are, like he came to be a model, and they are since, the testimony that he's hearing is that they are actually modeling what they saw in him. And I think I'm struck by how easy it would be to like forget the model and like start wandering into other models, right? Like we have examples of power all around us all the time. And what is the power, the model that I see from you versus what is the model that I see from a president or a local official or a teacher at school, right, for that matter? Who are the people that I see and how does that influence the way that I interact in my community? And the testimony is that they actually responded not just with word, but with action.
Yeah.
So there's something that's literally happening as a community. It's not pockets of individuals doing something good and sharing their faith necessarily all by themselves, but there's something larger that draws, I think Paul intentionally sets up communities, right? Like he doesn't go to one person, one person picks it up and he says, go to another one person and one, right? So, yeah.
I think we talked about this a little bit in our discussions, but just how like in the Old Testament you can see how Israel is supposed to be this example to the rest of the people around them, and so the Thessalonians are being, first of all, they're called, they're chosen, they're God's people, and they're, it said, for you brothers became imitators of God's churches in Judea, and so it doesn't just say like, I don't know, is there Thessalonians, but you know there was a bunch of different people from different backgrounds living in Judea. Mm. And it's saying, like, they were imitators, they were, like, examples, and you became. And that's one thing where I was like, I loved that. It doesn't say, because in past letters with Paul, we see, like, he's like, be imitators, do this. But here he's like, you became imitators. And it's like, kind of like the soil thing, which is really funny
because
I actually was just doing a kids' Sunday school thing with the girls, And it, we were talking about the soils, and one of the ways, the one of the videos explained, like, the ones with thorns was really, struck me a little bit, because you look at the other ones, it's like, it fell on soil, didn't have roots, it died. Yeah. The other ones, you know, scorched up, but the thing about being choked up, was like, oh, how, and they used the words, like, getting, like, distracted by other things, the things of the world that, like, like the way they, he talks about that, like, you turned away from idols, like, basically they gave up all these materialistic things that controlled their lives, and they said, yeah, I want to be the soil that's, like, producing all kinds of fruit, you know? So, I think it's really interesting to see how, like, what does it mean to be imitators of Christ? Do we, like, we have to look different. We have to look different. And it doesn't mean that we have, like, signs that declare it. Like, our lives, our very lives, and our actions, and what they're saying, it's not by words, but in our actions is what people will see. And that will bring God his glory, that God receives glory from that. And that's what he saw with it, like, that was his plan. I hope for Israel in general was that, like, the other people surrounding them would see that who fought their battles? God fought their battles. And, like, I don't know, it seems like, you know, for them, even in their persecution with the Thessalonians, that who's there fighting your battle? Well, who's on your side?
Yeah. you guys are identifying all of these ways that are so different than what I've experienced in the church. We tend, my experience has been, there's this, like, tendency to celebrate new believers because they tend to be really excited.
Yeah.
So we mistake excitement and zeal for character and action and turning from idols and toward the living God. And so somebody says, I want to follow Jesus, and there's an excitement that sometimes we settle for. Mm-hmm. Like, that's enough.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I hear from you guys are there's a love, right? And love isn't just, you know, strong feelings, but love is always for us defined by the activity of Jesus, who gave himself on a cross for it, right? So, like, this is, they are, when Paul later in chapter 5 will say, like, continue to encourage each other, and, like, these are, like, things that they are doing, active, and so,
yeah,
that just strikes me that you guys keep talking about these very deliberate things that they are doing, not just words, but deeds.
It's intentional.
Yeah.
Like, it's, I think, like, authentic community isn't accidental, and being in the same space for an hour or two isn't community necessarily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, if we don't get coffee together or tea, if that's your thing, but like, if you don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, spend time together and, like, just be humans and, like, live life together. I don't know how, like, it's a community. I think some of what we do as Christians and call community is really weird. And yeah, recently it's something that's, like, struck me and, like, bothered me, actually, is how often we boast of community, but we don't, like, even talk to each other in a way to, like, get to know each other. You know what I mean? Like, there's people that I've gone to church with for, like, years who don't even know I have brothers and sisters. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Did you know?
Okay. Yeah, but when you do life with people, you talk and you have conversations, you know what I'm saying? And, like,
yeah, you have conflict.
Yeah, there's conflict. Right. You have to be around each other to even have conflict.
Yeah.
So, like, in the space that we, like, have allotted for, like, the way we do church, and I'm not, yeah, the way we just do church is the main event is the preaching. The main event isn't each other. When, like, the reality is, like, the main event is each other. Like, the preaching is, I can read the Bible. We live in the technology age. I can go on YouTube and listen to to Pastor Curtis or whoever, John Piper, whoever, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, whoever, you know what I'm saying? But, like, so the preaching's not even the main event. We are, but we don't make ourselves the main event. We make the preaching the main event. And, like, let's say if I'm really, like, going through it, you know what I mean? Because we do this, people, we have moments. And you're like, how are you? My response is, I'm good. And I keep it moving because church is not even structured normally mm-hmm. to like sit down and like have a like real conversation. And I'll be a rude Christian to sit in the lobby and have coffee with a fellow believer and talk about like real things in real life instead of sitting and listening to somebody like talk for 15 minutes to an hour and a half. Mm-hmm.
So a couple things. One of the things that we were talking about, and you and I have talked about this some, is like, how do we go deeper in community if we, like, the three of us have all done missions trips and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about how InterVarsity talks about it, you have to get to the red line. You have to hit that point at which people want to check out of community. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the mission field, you're stuck. So how mm-hmm. you get through that red line is through curiosity and questions and opening your paradigms to being reshaped so that you can continue to engage with the culture that the Lord has called you to. The question that you and I talked about the other day was like, how do we hit a red line at church? Like, how do we create the space? Because some of it is the conflict. It's like, can we do life together, have conflict, move past it, and still love one another? Mm-hmm. But it seems like that oftentimes we keep ourselves from having to from having entered conflict with each other, or even, and to some degree, and I'll say this for myself at work, is even like I had to make a choice today. Was I going to ask somebody a question that might bring conflict? And I was like, God, don't do it. Don't do it, man. It's too much work. It's too much work. It's not my business. Like I could rationalize, even with scripture, I could look at Thessalonians and see where you are witnesses and so is God of how holy and righteous and blameless and how we dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, urging, right? Like mm-hmm. I can use all those things to validate why I shouldn't bring up a question that might put somebody on the spot.
Yeah.
And yet, because I want community, because I want transformation with this person who has way more power than I do in the organization, I typed a very polite responses just saying, hey, I'd love to hear more of the context in which you were speaking. I feel like I was left with questions mm-hmm. that I'd love to have some more input on. Mm-hmm. And that was intentionally to raise issues that I think are at play.
Yeah.
Not for the sake of conflict, I'm not trying, but it does mean I had conflict in myself as mm-hmm. to whether or not I wanted to push to get clarity mm-hmm. with somebody who I was partnering with, right? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes even simply we don't push for clarity because we think it might bring conflict.
Yeah. It's so good. Just the reflection on the need for that red line, that you're in this space where you can't escape and you have to figure out how to move forward through this. Mm-hmm. And I think you're naming one of the, I think, foundational deficiencies in the life of the church. We have to plan mission trips mm-hmm. because we don't see ourselves as people who have been given a mission right where we're at, so that we need each other so desperately that we cannot do God's will apart from our commitment to one another.
Yeah.
So that we have to go somewhere else where we have to manufacture that for ourselves, as opposed to a sense of like, no, here we, and you find, and I think what I hear from Manny when mm-hmm. he's describing the nature of the relationships, the depth of relationship in First Thessalonians, they were being attacked from all sides.
Yeah.
Like they knew they needed each other if they were going to survive, if they were going to grow in holiness, if they were going to be this light, this witness, if they were going to succeed, they were going to have to cling to each other. We don't
feel that.
We don't sense that these relationships are necessary for us. They're optional.
And we treat it as such,
and we can schedule each other in.
Well, yeah.
When it's convenient for us, when it fits into everything else we're doing, we don't see these as core to shaping everything else.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah. Good job.
So that's part of, for me, this. You name the way that the preaching act can sometimes become the main thing. And I think in our worship gathering, if we listen to one person and then we go online, we listen to one person and it's the same person, or not, but again, there's like this sense of, okay, I go, you know, I have somebody that I learn from, somebody that, but to demonstrate, these are the kinds of conversations that should fill our lives as we're reading scripture together, right? The three of you have been reading 1 Thessalonians independently. You've been discussing them together. I'm jumping in kind of for the first time with you, really talking about it. But what does it look like? How does 1 Thessalonians shape our conversations and our relationships? It's fascinating to me. And so that's at least a part of why I think this could be really cool to do on a regular basis, drawing other people, you know, in our church into this type of thing.